The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Leo Varadkar, former Taoiseach, good morning and welcome.
Good morning and congratulations on the new show.
I love the new digs,
the new studio. It's nice.
Well, it's the same old show, but in a different location, yes. A different time slot. And that was the plan, not to do a new show, but to try and get elements of the old.
The weekends, yeah. Sure.
How are you getting on?
Good, yeah.
Busy?
Busy, nothing like I was busy before. So it's a different type of busy. I think I'm just the kind of person who's always going to be busy, but much more in control of my own diary, and that's nice.
At the same time, I remember it was Mary Harney, and whether she was quoting somebody else, I don't know, but she said that the worst day in government is better than the best day in opposition.
Mm.
But to paraphrase that and borrow it, you know, the worst day in government, the best day you have when you're out of government, it cannot be anything like being in government, holding the levers of power, being influential.
Yeah, look, I loved it, and I was nearly 20 years in the Dáil and 13 years at the cabinet table, so it wasn't and 7 years leading my party, so it wasn't a short innings. But it is all consuming, and there's very little space or time for anything else. And I'm liking now the fact that for the first time in a very long time, I'm not really responsible for anyone else. I'm not accountable to anyone else. And with that comes personal and intellectual freedom that I really like. So, it's going well.
You did write a column before Micheál Martin went off to Washington, and you said it was a tightrope he'd be walking, but you wouldn't be, I suppose, brave enough to offer him advice. And then you went on to offer him advice in that column.
Well, it was very, I think it was kind of measured. I mostly did in that column was sort of describe my own experience of having been there and how it works. And I kind of concluded with the key point, which is really he's the only one there in the moment who can judge how to handle it correctly. And I think he handled it well.
I think he did well. I mean, almost a Trump whisperer, shall we say.
Yeah, not sure there are really any Trump whisperers, to be honest. the ones we all talked about being Trump whisperers months ago don't seem to have all that influence, really.
Now, when you look back on that time, Trump Mark I was very different to Trump Mark II.
Mm-hmm. I think so, in lots of different ways. Aside from the fact that he's older and angrier and more bitter, the checks and balances and guardrails that were there before are gone. His first administration, he was surrounded by a lot of traditional Republicans and cabinet members who I think
the so-called adults.
Would have restrained him a bit. Officials that are now gone from all the different government departments, the State Department, for example, in particular, the Pentagon, and then also the Supreme Court was not as on his side as the current one is. So that's kind of worrying.
Is it concerning that one individual, now we've seen it throughout history that individuals can affect massive change in their own countries and indeed globally. You can look at Adolf Hitler, I suppose, most famously in the 20th century, but you can go back to Napoleon, people like that who changed the shape of Europe, even the boundaries of Europe. Is it disturbing that a democracy 250 years in the making in the United States can be dismantled by one man?
Well, America is still a democracy, but I am worried about the health of their democracy. A lot of people do these studies and indexes on to what extent a country is a true democracy. There's no perfect democracy. And I remember reading the other day that America has slid by X number of points, much faster than happened in Hungary or Turkey or other places where democracy has been or is being unwound. The checks and balances are supposed to work. Congress, the Supreme Court, they're not working so well at the moment. But there are midterm elections that are coming up in November. And I think they'll be very significant as to whether the Democrats can take back the House and maybe even the Senate. If they're fair, and also if the result is accepted. The elections will happen and you would expect the results to be respected. But you can't be sure. Not that long ago, President Trump tried to get the result changed in Georgia in 2004.
That was 2020.
2020, tried to get the result changed in Georgia and then encouraged a mob to march on Congress to prevent the election being certified. And he's much worse now than he was then. So, you would have to be a little bit worried that the elections in November if they happen, and I think they will, and if they're free and fair, whether the result will be disputed.
But how can a party like the Republicans, you know, conservatives with a small c, how can they change so rapidly? I mean, is it because everything is dominated by money? If you don't have money, you don't get elected. And therefore, you have to bend the knee to whoever it might be, whether it's the NRA or the Jewish American lobby or whoever it might be. You've got to bend the knee or you won't have the funds to even compete.
Well, look, money's hugely important in American elections, much more so than is the case here. Thankfully, we have very strict limits on how much you can accept and how much you can spend, and that's liberating. I probably spent 3 or 4 days a year fundraising. I know my American political colleagues spend half their time fundraising. Mm. That's the difference. And you read the British newspapers and you hear about the Prime Minister having a meeting with the top donors to discuss policy. Like, I never had a meeting with donors to discuss policy. Mm. You know, so it does show the difference here. And it's great that we have those laws in Ireland around finance. But I think the main thing with the Republicans in the US is that Donald Trump is very popular with the large section of the public. And no matter what he says or does, they'll follow him. They see him as a great man. They see him as the leader. And if he says a square is a circle, well, then a square is a circle.
But number is falling a bit.
It is falling,
mid-30s now. Mid-30s. Yeah.
So I know a few Republicans in the US who are privately very critical of President Trump, but they're afraid to go against him because they would then risk losing their primary. You know, for
they'll put a Trumper in.
Yeah, he will punish disloyalty. So, you know, there is a fear there. The point to which that might flip is where people become more afraid of the public than of President Trump. If some Republicans start worrying about losing their seat altogether, more so than losing the primary,
the process is beginning to happen.
And the primaries are kind of pretty much over now, or most of them are over now. So now the worry is, do I hold my seat in November? And then also a number are retiring and they're more likely to
be vocal at this point.
Yeah, they're more likely to. You see that with like Tom Tills in North Carolina, for example, they're more likely to take the view that
I'm
worrying what history will say about me rather
exactly.
than
the last election. Exactly, he's looking to his legacy and he knows that anything is so. I mean, there's no doubt that the day of reckoning will come for Trump and his ilk. It'll come, but how soon it comes, whether it's, even in this decade or whether the Republicans will prevail.
And then you have to ask the question, will he make some attempt to have a third term? I find it a little bit hard to believe that he's building that big ballroom there for Usha and JD to have parties in. But one of the theories that I've heard from people is that he will actually go in 3 years' time. He won't seek a third term, but he'll try and set himself up, if you like, as the eminence grise or the leader down in Mar-a-Lago, who everyone still has to go to.
Yeah, and of course he's the chair of the Board of Peace in perpetuity, which is a bit of a nonsense board anyway. Ireland's role in world affairs. I mean, we are a militarily neutral country, although not necessarily politically neutral. What can you say about the voice that we have and the voice that we could have?
Yeah, look, we have a voice, and I think we use it very effectively. We often talk about Ireland punching above its weight in the world. I think we do, but let's be realistic about what that means. That means as a country of maybe 5.5 million people, we probably have the influence of one that has 10 or 20. We're not a major economic or military power. We don't make the big decisions. We can't really change the course of world events. But we do have a role to play, and I think we've use that effectively on certain issues and then try to lead on things like climate finance. We're not cutting our international development budget when other people are. That's very important. And then also the contribution that we make to the European Union and to the United Nations as well.
Now, we saw on the front of the Irish Times today the story about a Russian vessel which was taking aluminium from Ohinish to St. Petersburg, parking itself adjacent to the cables off our south coast. Does that kind of thing worry you? I mean, it could be just gamesmanship by the Russians, whether this ship called the Arne has the capability to send some sort of robot down to have a look at the cables or even snip the cables. Mm. We don't know.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. I don't know enough about that particular ship to comment on it, but I do know about the cables that surround our island, you know, communications cables. We obviously have gas connectors as well that bring gas from the UK to Ireland. We'll have a electricity connector with France that's being built at the moment. And in many ways, Ireland is the Western approach to Europe. And security threats have changed. If you were going back 30, 40, 50 years, we would have thought of security in terms of the risk of an invasion, which was and remains very low. But security threats are now different. It's cyber attacks. And we had a cyber attack on our health service. It's interference with the cables around our island. It's espionage. It's terrorism. All those security threats have changed. And I think that's why we've had to change our stance.
Do you have any regrets about maybe how little was done to reinforce our naval capabilities and our undersea capabilities and indeed our radar capabilities, which are being slowly addressed now, but in your time, or was this so far behind the horizon that it wasn't on the agenda?
It was certainly further down the agenda. You know, the real issues we had in the Defence Forces at the time was not so much the equipment, it was being able to hire the qualified naval staff and artificers and engineers and so on. And I think that remains a problem. That wasn't particularly lack of money. It was being able to find the people, and that's an issue across the public service at the moment. But it was further down the agenda. You know, we did increase, during my time at Taoiseach, we increased defence spending by, I think, 70% and brought Ireland into PESCO, into the European security system. Could more have been done sooner? Absolutely. That's probably true of everything.
The wisdom of hindsight, I suppose.
But of course, if you did more there, you would have to have done less somewhere else. And people will always tell you what you should have done more of, but not what you should have done less of as a consequence.
One of the things closer to home, I suppose, is the role of Hungary within the EU. And it appears that in all the treaties we had, we never put in a mechanism by which we could boot somebody out, somebody who's acting like Orbán is in Hungary, in bad faith. He's obviously in collusion with the Russians on all sorts of fronts. In terms of his foreign minister leaking stuff directly to Sergei Lavrov in the Kremlin.
Yeah, well, there are mechanisms, but they require near unanimity. So
where unanimity bar the country that you're trying to target.
So you only ever need one ally. And when I was at the European Council table, they had the Poles. Poland was then not run by Donald Tusk. It was run by Pisz, who are ideological allies. Although they're not pro-Russian, so they've parted ways a bit since then. And now at the moment, they would have support from Fico in Slovakia and Babiš in the Czech Republic. So that's the problem, really, is the rules require near unanimity.
Because the activities
which
of all...
Which
the
is difficult in a union of 27, because two or three people can hold on.
In all the councils of ministers, the whole thing is based on everyone acting in good faith and looking to the good of Europe as their fundamental principle. But that does not seem to be the case, certainly in Orbán's case. Now, maybe he'd be defeated in the...
Well, let's see. Yeah, these are hugely important elections coming up in Hungary in April, only a few weeks away. And in many ways, Viktor Orbán is the father of illiberalism, authoritarianism, populist nationalism,
and all the rest.
So it'll be interesting to see if he can hold on.
Are you concerned?
Our old colleague Owen Murphy, of course, is head of the election monitoring mission there and making sure that the elections are fair.
Are you concerned about the drift to the right that is, even in normal liberal countries, it's evident?
I am. I'm circumspect about it, though. You can see populist, nationalist, right-wing governments getting elected, for sure. You can also see them getting defeated, too. And we saw that in the Netherlands. They didn't make the breakthrough that they would have liked to have in Denmark, even though they did well, but they still only came fifth. And then, we see in Slovenia, for example, as well, it looks like Prime Minister Golob will hold on. So, they can win, that they can also be defeated. And in some cases, they kind of move to the centre. They don't always. I think it's fair to say that, Giorgia Meloni, when she became Prime Minister in Italy, there were big concerns that she would be pro-Russian, that she wouldn't be part of the European mainstream. She has been. I don't agree with everything she's doing domestically, but internationally she has been quite good. And then, that those kind of parties of the right that 10 years ago wanted to pull their countries out of the euro or wanted to pull their country out of the European Union altogether, that they've dropped all of that, which I think is actually quite interesting.
That's a Trump effect, isn't it? That,
And the Brexit effect.
Political careers. I mean, your political career, you mentioned all the time you spent in the Dáil and then the number of years at the cabinet table, but it was historically short, I suppose, compared to many people who preceded you in the office of Taoiseach. Do you think that's an inevitability now? That
I don't think 13 years a cabinet was short. Now I think Simon Coveney, Richard Bruton are the longest serving Fine Gael ministers ever, or something like that. But
if you think
Taoiseach was 4.5 years, which was not by no means the shortest, but not long either. Yeah. But I think what you're saying, or what you're asking, is the turnover quicker now in politics, and it is.
Is the reason for that the kind of abuse that is heaped upon politicians, the kind of disrespect that is now very evident compared to years ago?
Well, it's not just politics. I was reading
the local guard,
our CEO, reading in the US that the average turnover now for a CEO of a major company is something like 4.5 or 5 years. So I think there's just more turnover in life, full stop. And then also politics has become more volatile and more fragmented. Mm.
And nastier.
It has, yeah.
Are you enjoying private life?
I am, doing lots of different things, which is really, really interesting. So published my memoir, as you know, paperback versions out during the summer, and do some teaching over in the US in Harvard and Notre Dame, which is a lot of fun, and serve on a couple of boards, do a bit of consulting. So I'm busy, but never crazy busy anymore.
So life is good.
Yeah.
Leo Varadkar, former Taoiseach, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.